Hello and welcome to Reality TV. What a week and weekend we have had. I feel like the world has once again flipped turn upside down and everything yet nothing is making sense. I'm going to try to stay really upbeat and optimistic for the rest of the episode, but I have a couple things to get off my chest. Feel free to jump forward if you don't necessarily believe the same ethics and morals as I do. I'm pissed. I'm pissed off for all of you. I'm pissed off for the Secret Service agents and every other man and woman who was forced to work in deathly conditions and who were working in them and didn't even know it. I'm pissed for the toll it's taken on every person in this country financially and or emotionally. On a personal level, I'm pissed off. The last months and weeks of my dad's life were in quarantine in a depressing environment. I haven't been able to have a funeral for him with my family. It's all preventable. It didn't have to be this way. It doesn't have to be this way. And for our cowardly tyrant to draw crowds out in order to make his chinless, pants-shitting, roid rage, cowardly orange ass feel better is nothing short of despicable. And for anyone who still supports him, I really don't think that you are listening right now, but if you are, go volunteer, drive your ass down to DC, and you chauffeur Trump around in his hermetically sealed SUV so his Secret Service agents can go home to their families or now go quarantine for over 2 weeks. And while you're at it, go on up to the billing department at a Walter Reed, and I'd like you to repay all the taxpayers for the mileage and the gas and all the medical bills we are going to be paying for Trump's ass while you're at it. Whew. All that to say, I really sincerely tried my best to try to find some blind items and mindless entertaining stuff to talk about, but even UK Daily Mail, which is normally chock full of stupid shit, let me down. So I'm just going to jump right into it. You know, now is as good a time as any to switch gears before the real snowflakes blow up my iTunes reviews once again and tell me how I throw weekly feminist rallies. True story. And to that I say, thank you. I am flattered. Now, Married at First Sight, New Orleans. It is 1 month down and a quarantine to go. Now, at the end of this episode, there was quite a bit of time filler. It was when the couples got this basket of photos and their vows and their wedding day videos. And basically, the couples look at each other and say, this was when we didn't know each other, but now we do. Remember that? Yeah, I remember that too. What a crazy day. And scene. So let's talk about the good stuff that was not time filler. And I'm going to talk about Brett and Olivia first because, you know, I'm already feeling pretty salty as it is, so I might as well just ride that wave here. I want to know, in all sincerity, if Brett eats anything that requires a fork, because I swear to God, we have only seen him consuming food where his hands are shoving messy wrap-based meals into his face. Just one time, just one meal. That's all I want, is to see him sit up at a 90-degree angle to the table and bring the food up to his mouth. I realize that I sound like my grandma in this moment, but it's so true. Just throwing your head down into a plate is so unattractive. It's disgusting. And I don't think I trust a man or a woman who's going to order finger foods when they know they're being filmed. I don't think I would even order a sandwich if I knew that someone was going to have a camera on me. You do like a dainty salad or something, and then you go home and you stuff your face like a normal human. All right, Pastor Cal, he's back. He needs paycheck, just like we all do. And Olivia and Brett start talking to him about how there's a difference in Brett's behavior on camera and off camera. And I was stunned to see that there are kind of like hidden cameras in the apartment. And what it picked up was Olivia getting all cozy with Brett. She's cuddling him. She's giving him kisses when he wants to, which is not at all the Ice Queen persona we've been led to believe she is. Not that I ever believed she really was, because she's been very honest and forthcoming. And she's also, obviously from that footage, been giving Brett more than a shot. She really is giving 100%. You could argue that she's being different on camera than off camera, which is what she talks to Pastor Cal about. But there was something else going on in that conversation that left me totally confused. Like, I could not read between the lines that Olivia was saying. Like, it seemed like she was saying something without saying it, if that makes any sort of sense. The three of them seemed to be on the same page, but I was like that fourth person, like, wait, who? Who's on first? Who's on second? Who's going to first? I didn't understand it at all, but I could have been distracted by Olivia's hives. Who knows? You know what my least favorite part of the day is? That hour before dinner when I'm scrambling to figure out a meal that everyone's going to like. And half the time, I default to one of my regular meals I have in rotation, only to see I'm short one or two of the ingredients. Or that bell pepper I was going to use looks pretty gross sitting in the bottom of my fridge now. So there goes that plan. I know I'm not alone, which is why I've been telling you to get yourself on the Green Chef train for well over a year now. I love Green Chef. My sister loves it. She orders my mom. And Green Chef is a USDA certified organic company. Their meal plans include vegan, vegetarian, paleo, and keto. So when you have company over who may have a more particular diet, for example, my niece is a vegetarian, I order some vegetarian meals. So whenever she comes over, I can easily whip something together and she loves it. She especially loves the fritters. So if you see that as an option, snatch those up. So, so good. I just got my box for this week's meals delivered today, which is Wednesday. And when I tell you it feels like Christmas morning when I open the box, it is not a stretch at all. So normally I get my boxes delivered on Monday, but I switched it up this week to get delivered on Wednesday because that's what worked better for my schedule. And there was no extra charge for that. It's all up to you. So when you open up your box, you're going to see your meals are all packed on ice. Everything is fresh. You don't have to worry about things looking, you know, a little soggy or warm because Green Chef takes care of it for you. They note where they're shipping to, and that definitely comes in handy during winter months if you live in the Midwest like me. You know, you don't want to trek out in the cold to go get groceries. Order your Green Chef and it's brought right to your door. So tonight I'm making the feta burgers, which I'm super psyched for. I've never tried them, but I took a little peek. The burger patties are nice and fat. The brioche buns, super fresh. They look delicious. I also saw some onions, peppers, aioli, and it's only going to get better because there's roasted potatoes on the side. Who doesn't love a carb? Now, if you are not a meat eater like I am, or maybe have a picky eater like my kids, how about some black bean and corn quesadillas or creamy truffle and mushroom linguine? I wouldn't even know what a truffle tasted like if it weren't for Green Chef. Like, that's fancy stuff for me, but here I am cooking it up like a pro because it's all diced and portioned for me. And that's what I love about Green Chef too, is that there are ingredients and flavors I never would have thought of that I've never had before in my life. And it makes it easy the next time I go grocery shopping to pick those things up and try to recreate it on my own. Truly, Green Chef could not make it any easier to eat healthier meals that are super flavorful and stay within your budget. Add in contactless delivery and it cannot be any easier or safer. Hand-picked items, high quality ingredients, and some nice cooler packs in there as well. So what are you waiting for? Go to greenchef.com/realityv80 and use code realityv80 to get $80 off across four boxes, including free shipping on your first box. You heard me right. I'll link you in the show notes because this is honestly a fantastic deal. $80 off and free shipping. That's greenchef.com/realityv80. Green Chef, the number one meal kit for eating well. Okay, Amelia and Bennett. Bennett goes and grabs breakfast with his sister Molly, and this could have been the entire episode for me. It was a lot. First of all, Molly gets a croissant that Brett would have loved. You know, it was something that she just dove into gullet first. I've never seen anyone eat a croissant like that besides, was it Colt or was it Mike on 90 Day Fiance? Or maybe it was Jorge. Oh, no, I'm thinking it was Jorge. And someone was sitting outside at a cafe and just like picked up a pastry and just went for it. Anyhow, we need to talk about Molly. Molly not only loves a croissant, she also loves a stuffed animal duck who she has named Youp, Y-O-O-P. I have to imagine Molly is either highly theatrical in kind of that annoying child actor way, or she might be on the spectrum. And I hope it's the latter because I will like her way more. There's just something about her intensity that takes getting used to. Like, I wasn't used to her by the end of this episode, which is why I think they should have just given her the hour so we could grow to love her like Bennett does. However, her tarot card readings are going to need some work, okay? It downright sucked. At one point, she tells Bennett, "You'll have a house outside." Well, I hate to be kind of a realist here, but isn't everyone's house outside? Like, she didn't say you're going to live outside, which is a completely different thing, just that his house is outside. I mean, well, my house is also outdoors. Do you see what I'm saying? Like, every house is built on an outside structure of grass or something. All right, I might be going a little tit for tat, but the other thing that Youp's life partner said that made me squirm was when Bennett said he was planning anniversary gifts for Amelia. And dead serious, she asks, "Does Amelia have a creative side?" Excuse me? Did you not see the bird on her head on her wedding day? Have you seen her balancing on a ribbon in the park? Yeah, I'd say she's got a creative side. And maybe Amelia's creative side isn't, you know, barking at the wait staff to find bird seed for her stuffed animal, but she's creative. Oh, I'm joking about this Youp stuffed animal, but I really can't with that. It really kind of pissed me off because if you're bringing this thing around as a joke to like a friend's house, maybe. I mean, it's not something I would do, but it's a different thing when you are giving people tasks. You're assigning jobs now. That kind of makes you an asshole. Like, this server had to go in the back and probably find something to play along with Molly. Anyhow, let's talk about Amelia's little lunch date. She meets with this friend, and she looks like someone who would be an SNL character. She was delightful. She had the most voluminous hair. I could only fantasize about having that. But their breakfast was accentuated with some whimsy, some quirkiness. And so far, I really respect Amelia. I've said this a million times. I think she's super smart and driven and confident. She can be herself in a very serious medical field. However, there is something I can't overlook at this point, and that is her constant close talking. She's a chronic close talker. And even watching that, I get anxiety. And I tend to attract close talkers in general, just like I collect strangers who want to tell me about their lives or what their favorite recipes are. Whenever I go grocery shopping, it turns into like a 2-hour trip because I get stopped by someone who's got to talk to me about seasoning their Ritz crackers or their grown adult son favorite potato. There's a potato recipe I got like a Thanksgiving or two ago. Anyhow, I understand this kind of thing. I just can't get used to close talking. So I'm going to need Amelia to close her mouth a little bit more, maybe just keep from leaning forward. Like, she leans into her chin, and I love her big, bright smile, which is why I'd love to see it, not have it under my nose when I'm talking to her. And that's just a helpful little hint during COVID, you know? Let's fast forward to Amelia and Bennett on a hike. I'm just like a super bitch in this episode. Sorry, guys. I'm just going with full on honesty this week. So they're hiking and Amelia's pretending to walk like a dinosaur or something. She's stopping every once in a while to let Bennett take care of his chiropractic stretches. Sure. Finally, we get to the scene that has been teased all season, and it's when Bennett tiptoes through the twigs and he tells Amelia that he loves her, and she says she loves him back. Oh, they're each other's lobsters. It's adorable. It's just too bad Youp wasn't there to witness it, but, you know, there probably would have been an alligator or an armadillo who would have come along and killed it. So later in the day, maybe the next day, whatever, you know, who's to know when you see a doctor dressed in a Simba onesie just laying around their house. Bennett comes in and he has a blender for Amelia as an anniversary gift. And I had to check myself because I started snarking right away thinking, oh God, did he get that thing secondhand? There's no box. He just walks in with it. But that had to have been a production thing, right? Like he can't just walk in there with a Vitamixer box or Oster, or is it Oster? Hamilton Beach, whatever. So he gets her the blender. Amelia's thrilled, but there's more. Bennett has also purchased a jaw harp. I thought I read that incorrectly, heard that incorrectly, but there's actually something called a jaw harp. I'm sure Amelia loved it. You know, it was nice and warm in his pocket. But it's just too bad she did not receive that jaw harp sooner because she could have used it while she was singing her song for Bennett. Again, zero musical knowledge here, but I'm going to say the song lyrics were beautiful, but there didn't seem to be like a melody or a chorus. It was not something you can sing along to, nor was there a need for the harmonica stand strapped to her neck. She had one of those same things that the blues traveler guy had on his neck, but she never played it. Like I was waiting for a, you know, the hook brings you back, but it didn't happen. So much for making my anniversary dreams come true. Rude. All right, let's move on to Henry and Christina. Really the couple that is a train wreck. They just keep chugging through the station every week, and I love to hate watching them. So Henry's friend, who I call Not Trishelle, comes over, and immediately she requests wine and sparkling water. What is with Henry and all these high-maintenance women that he has around him? I think we're supposed to like Not Trishelle because she doesn't like Christina. You know, she's one of us, but I don't like Not Trishelle either. It's almost like she wants Henry to always be her cute, shy, single guy friend because he'll always be moping around making her feel good. You know, it's like she doesn't want to fuck him, but she doesn't want anyone else to fuck him either. No, I don't even need to talk about who he's not fucking anymore because it seems as if finally, I'm like doing the sign of the cross here, finally Christina has gotten the hint. So she has her annoying friend over who you know she is calling like my gay or he's my gay husband because Christina's basic like that. And this guy is telling her that she should keep pushing Henry to be more intimate with her. Like just make the first move. No, she's finally understanding that Henry is just not that into her. But here he is telling her just to go for it. That is not a true friend. He is someone who loves when their friends have life drama because then it makes him feel better and it gives him an excuse to go out and drink with them a lot or I'll show up with a couple bottles of champagne. That's bullshit. He is not a good friend to her. Not that she's a great person either, but I just hated all of that conversation. They even attempted a charcuterie. It was pretty weak. I mean, I'm still going to eat it, but the whole thing was just all no for me. Now, Karen and Miles, I'm going to group them in the no pile too. I'm just really bored with them. I usually love a good two truths and a lie. Even people I don't know, I could just people watch and listen to it. But with these two, I totally zoned out. I couldn't even tell you at what point in the episode the two of them were alone together. I remember him giving her a t-shirt at some point. I recall them having dinner, a double date with Woody and Imani, and I had a couple chuckles, but that's about it. They're just very beige at this point. Not that I want drama with them because I want them to be together. I want Karen to relax into Miles' hunky arms and for him to wear those gym shorts with the long spandex underneath. I want it to work out for him, but I'm gonna need to see them up their game. Speaking of games, I'd like to toss a fun game out there to Woody. Let's see how many more episodes you can go without using the nickname Sweets. There's no rhyme or reason for it, but that nickname in particular is whatever level is 10 times beyond nails on a chalkboard for me. He's got to stop with it. Now, the two of them, Woody and Imani, sit down to have this budgeting talk, and I really enjoyed it. Normally, I hate the budgeting talk and the who's going to do the groceries and the chores, but I was digging this because it opened my eyes to a whole occurrence that I didn't even know was possible. Woody says he can spend $500 to $1,000 on clothes in one visit. I don't even shop at any stores that sell clothes that would add up to $500 to $1,000. Now, if we were talking home accessories, if I were to go to Home Goods or Target, obviously I'm going to give my left boob and right kidney to have that budget, right? But it wouldn't be on clothes. I would be getting throw pillows and rugs and lamps, home accessories, and that could be a date night. Hello? But on clothes? Even if I could, I don't think I would spend that much. And shoes and bags aren't my thing, so maybe that's what ups the price, ups the costs. But spendy items, pricey items to me is basically anything over $35. Now, if it is a gift like Woody goes shopping for later, then I'm all aboard because then I don't have to feel guilty that I received something that is that expensive because I didn't spend it. You know, Imani does have a very good guy for him to go out and do that. It was really cute. Like, he was sincerely enjoying picking things out for her. Now, if I had to nitpick, which I don't have to, but I enjoy, I would have opted for bigger diamond stud earrings and skipped the bracelet. But, you know, who's going to say no to gifted diamonds? And I don't even think he did the bracelet in the end, did he? Coupon book? I don't know about that one. I think that's more of a gift for him than it is for her. And I worry, in the long run, is that going to be the default gift? Oh, I'm going to give you some coupons because you loved them the first time. Fast forward 5 years and you're like, really? I still have 4 years of foot massages that you haven't followed through on. I'm just saying. The more you know, Mr. Woodrow. What's your daily ritual? Mine is black coffee first thing in the morning and taking 2 women's essential vitamins from Ritual. And I can proudly say my husband Dave is a huge fan too now. I told you before he was taking some so-called vitamins from who knows where, and they were sitting unused in our cabinets for months. And why? Because they were ginormous white chalky pills, you know what I'm talking about. And according to him, they tasted like metal. Yikes. So I replaced them last month with Ritual for Men, and at first he was skeptical but intrigued because they look futuristic and cool. I know, it's all about the details for him. But the interesting thing was that he turned the bottle over and he saw that Ritual doesn't pack a whole bunch of vitamins and supplements into each vitamin because they know our bodies just don't need it. Ritual believes in food first. Our food provides us with mostly what we need, but there are some gaps in our diet. The new Essential for Men includes different dosages and vitamins than Essential for Women because men's diets and lifestyles are different. Through research, Ritual found men deficient in vitamin A, so they sourced a vegan-friendly, sugar-free, non-GMO, gluten-free, allergen-free source in Switzerland. Women, on the other hand, are more deficient in iron, so Ritual really packs a punch there for us. Now it's easy to get all of our essential vitamins by bundling my monthly delivery of Ritual with Dave's, and I save on shipping. And if you use the promo code I'm giving you, you can save even more. Just $1 a day to have all the essential nutrients your body needs delivered right to your door when you want it. Snooze or cancel anytime, no strings attached. Just these daily changes can lead to big results for all of us. So start small today. Ritual is offering my listeners 10% off your first 3 months. Try it out, satisfaction guaranteed. Go to ritual.com/realityTV to start your ritual today. That's 10% off during your first 3 months at ritual.com/realityTV. All right, the time has come. We are wrapping up 90 Day Fiancé Happily Ever After with a back-to-back night of tell-alls, part 2 and 3. For me, both of these tell-alls were so freaking boring. I mean, sure, there were some high notes and low notes, but they gave us way too much Angela in this stupid egg donation surrogacy storyline, which I have a lot to say about, as you can imagine, and way too much Larissa and Eric. That's all bullshit. I could have seen more sticking up for Kalani, which leads me to a little critique I have. I really like to give Sean Robinson a break most of the time because all these people she's talking to, save for Kalani's family, are batshit crazy. But how the hell did she not call Tammy on this BS? Because everyone's trying to talk sense into Tammy and we know it's not going to happen. But she needed to really be called on the carpet. Over and over again, Tammy goes between telling Kalani she should stay out of it. It's a family thing. Stay out of it, Kalani. But then she tells her to tell Asuelu what he needs to do. Like, it's her job to teach him what to do in relationships. Just tell him how he should be as a husband and a father. Really, bitch? You can't have it both ways. Tell her to stay out of it, but then also tell her you need to tell him what to do all the time. It seems to me that Tammy loves Asuelu in the same way, let's say, a Teresa Giudice loves her brother Joe. If you don't watch Real Housewives of New Jersey, another way to put this is both of these women, Teresa and Tammy, want their brothers to get a divorce so they can have them all to themselves in a very creepy, incestual way. I'm just calling it like I see it. Now, like everyone, I felt bad for Kalani because she's trying to do an old school Michelle Obama, take the high road. When they go low, we go high. But sometimes the high road is impassable. Okay, you can't get through that high road, so you gotta take the shitty low roads. Throw it into low gear, high gear. I don't know. I never learned stick shift, but you know what I'm saying? You gotta get down in the dirty and get through the thick of it, and you just have to go there sometimes. And Asuelu, speaking of gotta go, he really does have to go. In my heart of hearts, I want him to be a really good dad and a provider for his sons, to be a good husband. But is he really truly capable of that? He doesn't seem capable of even taking care of himself. You know, he gets himself to volleyball practice and he goes dancing, but barely. And as for Asuelu's mom, something's up with her. Kalani pulling out that popcorn was nothing short of hilarious and shady and perfect. But why did Sean not say, Kalani, what are you trying to say there with the popcorn? But then again, Kalani didn't have to say a word because we just had a look at her. The look in her face said it all, that she is full of shit, not meaning Kalani, meaning Asuelu's mom. She's full of shit. She's saying what she needs to say to redeem herself from the season. I don't think any of us bought it there. I would like to believe that, but I don't see where Asuelu's mom could go from being so heartless and so selfish and just a bitch to this loving, empathetic grandmother who loves her son and loves her grandkids. That's all an act. Now let's talk about Colt and Jess. Bringing this right back to where it all starts, where it all begins, the root of the matter. How the hell does Colt have all these women wanting and willing to have sex with him? It would be one thing if Colt were a good-looking guy, or even how he looks now. But let's say he had this great job and he's very driven. He has a lot of ambition. But Colt is a loser with low body tone. He lives with his mom and he has man bangs that he's rocking now. Those bangs are so bad. It seemed like between the time period of Tell All Part 1 and 2 and 3, they were growing at the same rate my thighs can grow when I'm eating sugar. And this weekend, I made Halloween cookies with my kids, and I can't stop eating them. They are the really good sugar cookies. Actually, it's a sugar cookie recipe from one of our very own, one of my favorites, Carrie. She owns Bombshell Cupcakes. Go and check her out on Instagram. And she's got a Facebook page, too. She shared her recipe, and it's so freaking easy and so delicious. I can't decorate them like she does, but the taste is, oh my God, it's so freaking good. So anyway, all that to say, Colt's bangs are really long and they're growing really fast like my thighs. So like I said, I don't know why he's getting multiple women at the same time that want to be with him. I want to say this for not only Jess and Larissa and Vanessa and who else, I don't know. Ladies, I don't care who you are, where you live, what you look like, what your credit score is. All of us need to raise the bar. Let's require more out of our partners. And men, this goes for you too. We are all better than this. We are better than Colt. And I tried keeping a flow chart of, you know, who Colt was with when, because there was probably about 40 minutes where we were trying to figure out, did he cheat on Jess? Did he not? And Debbie got up to pleasure herself. She was getting a little turned on with all this talk of Colt having sex. Very disturbing on every level. And there's this psychological dynamic that really has gone above and beyond where it ever has before. It really is alarming. I think they both get aroused by Colt seeking out and finding victims. Like, the look on Debbie's face becomes this maniacal, it's just evil. And both of them love it. They look at each other. They're feeding off of each other. They're laughing at all the other women. It's gross. And as weird as Larissa is, I was kind of thrilled that she was calling Colt out on his lies. And Jess, too. As for Vanessa, I think that was her name, right? That was Natalie later. Yeah, Vanessa was the neighbor, the one who took care of the cats. She's a damn mess. I think she thought she was going to come on there and look like the, you know, classy, I was going to say older woman, but I'm not even sure if she's older. But she's a disaster. Clearly, she has a chaotic life of her own that she wanted to jump from separating, divorce, and seeing this love, what would it be? Quadrangle between Debbie, Jess, Larissa, and Colt. She wanted to jump in there. She's crazy too. Now let's jump over to Sinjin and Tanya segment and the Fabio comparison that Sean threw out there. I mean, way to keep your eye on the pop culture pulse. Jesus. I mean, what's next? What's up, tie-in? Way to go, Sean. Now, the dynamic between Sinjin and Tanya is certainly tense, to say the least. And I'm kind of skeptical of everyone because, you know, all of these couples are trying so hard to get hired back for another season. But I don't see things truly going smoothly for these two. You know, Tanya's back up on her high horse as always. She's always convinced that her vision for the future is the only correct version of the future. And Sinjin is just stubborn enough to not give Tanya the satisfaction of knowing he knows what she wants to do because he doesn't want to do it. You know, he'd rather just sit there and look totally confused and not understand where she's coming from. But he absolutely knows. He just doesn't care that he's driving her crazy. It's like he's purposely doing it to push her away. Other than that, I just have to say, I personally find Sinjin to be a slacker in most ways. But Tanya met him exactly how he is and who he is, you know. She fell in love with him. He's never changed. She just isn't succeeding like she thought she was going to in changing him into what she wants now. And I have this sneaking suspicion that Sinjin being this big manly man, you know, confident guy in the bar, was a huge turn on for Tanya. You know, he can throw her over his shoulder and turn some heads with his loud South African accent drunk in a bar, and that turned her on. But once you are living and working and being married to, you know, the caveman explorer, if you will, that's very different when you are not on vacation or on a TV show. They jumped into it with cameras following them, and it was probably very fun and exciting. But now they're back to reality. The cameras are not around. And once you're off at butterfly school in Costa Rica, like Tanya was, and you're the one calling him now instead of him calling you and you're out drunk all the time, totally different story. And it sucks for Tanya that Sinjin's buddies are on the horn calling in because they're backing him up now. She's got no one there to stick up for her. It does suck. And while I didn't really feel bad for her, I started to empathize. But then I remembered, like we all do, how truly awful she was to Sinjin last year. She's just selfish. She's the worst. Now, I wish I would have transcribed what Sinjin's friend said, because I tell you what, they should either host the tell-alls from now on or get their own show. Knock Dr. Phil off his high horse. They could start a therapy practice. I wouldn't even care if they were licensed, because everything they said was spot on. It felt like we were all telling Tanya off what she needed to hear through them, right? Especially the guy on the right. He had a kind of European professor who also likes to forage for mushrooms on the hillside kind of look about him. He's someone who I would love to have a beer with and shoot the shit and ask him everything, but I'd also be afraid he could read my soul and call me vapid and stupid. You know what I mean? Like, he's way smarter than I am. Anyway, he asked Tanya if she thought they were a fit. And something about that very simple question was so powerful. It was almost as if it sucked the oxygen right out of Tanya. And Sinjin started answering, but the friend was like, no, Sinjin, shut up. We want her to answer. And sure as shit, Sinjin and Tanya contradicted each other. Sinjin was like, no, I don't think we're a fit. And Tanya was like, yeah, I really think we are. And Tanya has that Tanya-ness about her where she is so used to speaking louder and through people to get her way, kind of like Angela, to be honest. But now she's a grown-up. You know, it's not going to work the way it worked when you were in high school debate team or when you were trying to be class president. It's just not working for her anymore. Is there anything else to say? I don't think so. So let's fast forward to, oh God, where Sean flat out asked the couples how often they have sex. And I hate this question because it's very Andy Cohen, you know, like, oh, how often are you having sex? Next up, are those your real boobs? It's very gross to me. I hate it. Ugh. But of course, Elizabeth and Andre have to be the first ones to pipe up and say 5 times a week. Yeah, right. Sinjin says 4. Eriki says, I think he said like 3 or 4 with other things thrown in. Sure, Jan. And then we get to Angela and Michael. They said in a 2-week period, they had sex 38 times, which is about 37 plus too much for me, but they're all about it. I'll say this for all the couples, give it a few years living together and emptying the dishwasher, folding each other's underwear, and I guarantee that's going to change. But this leads to, I'm going to have to stretch out for this one. This leads to the discussion of Angela and Michael having a baby. It goes without saying that Angela is a master manipulator. She 100% on camera led Michael and his family to believe that her having a baby was an option, whether it was using one of Skyla's eggs as an egg donor or finding a surrogate or she could tote it. She was the one who put that out there as a possibility. But now she wants to do a little bait and switch and change the game. Number one, she says she wants to move a surrogate into her home to keep an eye on them. Well, here I go on my 2-time surrogate soapbox here. There is no way in hell a surrogate is going to move into her house. First of all, any legitimate egg donation surrogacy agency is going to vet their incredible women who are giving this gift to families. And most of the time, I would say probably 98, 99% of the time, these women have families of their own. They are done building their families. It's going to be very rare you find someone who has never had children, who doesn't want to have children, that's going to be like, yeah, go ahead. I'm going to have my first and only child with you, and I'm going to move into your house. That would never, ever happen. No woman's going to want to leave her family to live with Angela. Second of all, Angela doesn't have the money to put up for IVF and embryo transfers. And think about if that first transfer fails, you got to do another cycle of IVF. You have to have egg retrievals. That's a whole process. There's no way in hell Angela's going to have the money to do that, the patience to do it. And again, is anyone going to want to be matched with Angela and Michael? It goes two ways. It's not as if Angela's going to walk in there and have her pick of anyone and everyone from a yearbook of egg donors and surrogates. At the end of the day, an egg donor or a surrogate are the ones who are choosing the fortunate family who they think is, I don't want to say worthy of the gift, but they get to choose who they want to share this experience with. It's her body, whether it's a year, 2 years, 3 years, same goes for an egg donor. I mean, the fact that Angela is just being so flippant about it, like, oh, just give me an egg, and that Skyla shouldn't care, it's just DNA. I mean, fuck off. That's certainly going to convince someone that they want to take part in building your family the way that Angela's talking, and you know she would treat that person like shit. But let's get to what the real issue is here, and it's that, again, Angela's playing both sides. You know, she tells Michael that she can talk Skyla into giving them an egg, and then you know she turns the other way and tells Skyla that she's just not telling Michael. You know, I'll tell him what he wants to hear, but I'm not going to really do it. We all know she has no intention of making a baby with him. I actually feel badly for Michael here because he's been the one who's always been consistent. He's always been forthcoming about wanting a family, wanting at least one child. He never, ever swayed from that. Angela is really sick in another way because if you think about it, she's weaponizing having a baby. She likes to just throw it both ways. You know, if Michael loves me, he won't push having a baby. But it's not even about that. You know, Michael isn't springing a surprise on Angela. This isn't a new decision that they came to as a couple. Same goes for Angela. You know, she does not want a baby. The difference in all of this is that Angela was deceitful and vague about it, and Michael isn't and never was. And it's gross to me. Angela is minimizing having a child, egg donation, surrogacy, even talking about adoption, that it's just all so disgusting. And then Tanya, I have to throw this in here, Tanya offering up her eggs. And she said, I mean, look at all these features. You can have my eggs. No, girl. She even scared Michael off with that when he was like, no, 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 no. I think his arms were waving like a referee, like out of bounds. No, take it back 10 yards. Never going to happen. All right. So we jump ahead to part three and we pick up right where we left off. Angela coming in hot. She's verbally abusing Michael. She's that bully that's just always hammering home her point. And much like Tanya, she thinks yelling and speaking louder and talking through people is perfectly fine. That's her way of expressing herself. And then she makes that extra gross because she throws in that, I'm an American. This is our culture. No, bitch, that's not my culture. Don't group me or any of you guys in with however the hell she treats people, because that is not American. And then she tries to say, Americans are not submissive. What I don't think Angela understands is that she can be not submissive, but also be kind. That's not the same thing. Like, I don't submit to Dave. But that doesn't mean I just walk around this place and say everything's got to be my way or he's being a bad husband and we're heading to the courthouse because he's not listening to me. I'm an American. You know, you just can't have discussions, an actual civilized discussion with people like Angela, because they are so set in their ways that there's no use in even trying to rationalize or having a civil, meaningful conversation. It's never going to happen. Like a lot of people, maybe I was referring to at the beginning of the episode, she's a hothead and she's ignorant and she just doesn't want to learn anything. Like, she's done. She's doesn't want to change anything in her life, which is fine unless you are asking a partner to completely change their life to go along with you. She's just an asshole. Now, back to Sinjin and Tanya, they start talking about having kids. And just like the, are you, what was it? Not are you a match? Oh, are you a fit? Just like the, are you a fit question? Tanya wants kids like yesterday and Sinjin stops and is like, yeah, I don't see myself ever having a child. All right. Well, Tanya should take her own advice that she gave Michael and look at their relationship, examine your relationship, and then she should Set Sinjin free. Just go fly off like a little birdie. Just let the guy go already. Same could be said for Eric-y. I don't know what is going on with him and Larissa. I don't know if she's got like a taser to his balls or what shit he has on her that she owes him this. This thirsty thirst trap of Thirstersons was crazy. And then they had the chick call in with the hair flipping. What was her name? Natalie? I'm getting Natalie Vanessa mixed up. I don't understand it. I don't care. They're all weird. And the relationship between Eric and Larissa gives me some very weird, creepy vibes. There's some disordered relationship or something sinister going on. I don't have a good feeling about it. Now, other than that, we find out Jess got married. No surprise. I think we all saw that slip out in the last month or two. And Angela is going to have some cosmetic surgery. But you guys, you can't say anything to her because she's doing it for her. She's doing it for her personal empowerment. But she's fine with letting Michael's family in Nigeria get a cool $200,000 together for a GoFundMe IVF fund. But she doesn't have the money. You know, she can't do IVF because she doesn't have the money, but she can go have plastic surgery. And Jesus, I don't know. Who cares? I kind of want Angela to go away. I kind of want Tanya to go away. I could take way more Kalani. I actually need to deep dive into Kalani and Asuelu's current status because I'm concerned for her. I never, ever want to say you should just get a divorce. But in this case, Kalani is being pushed to the brink. And when you have two young kids or one young kid or no kids at all, and you are pushed that far, you could push someone to do some really unhealthy things. And I think it's most healthy for Kalani and Asuelu if they were just apart. They're two very different people, just like most of all of our couples here. Even Elizabeth and Andre, who claim they're happily married, they're very different. They probably shouldn't be together, although they're both pretty awful. I don't know where I'm going with that, but I know I am going to head on over and record an episode with my girl Amanda. We are recording an episode of Total Request Podcast in about 45 minutes. We're recapping the always hilarious episode of The Office entitled Halloween from season 2. Later this week, we are also going to watch Hocus Pocus. That's also at Total Request Podcast. And make sure you check out Patreon. That's patreon.com/lovetohateTV. Special shout out to 90 Day Meme, who is now a Patreon subscriber. Go and check out their Instagram. So funny. And until next week, you guys, seriously, take care of yourselves. Take care of each other. Wear a damn mask and stay salty.